Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guest is the mayor of El Cajon, Bill Wells. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, you have a lot of big news, but let's start, for listeners that may not have heard yet, with probably the biggest news to come out of East County in a few years, the reopening of the Performing Arts Center. Can you give us some details, please?
Yeah. I'm not sure if everybody knows this, but several years ago, we had to close the Performing Arts Center, mostly because it was financially unviable. And this was especially in 2008.
Right. And it needed a lot of repairs. It needed ADA upgrades. It needed a new roof. And in the depths of the recession, that was pretty tough for a struggling city to do.
That's exactly right. And so we made a difficult decision at that point, and we closed the Performing Arts Center, really always with the understanding that we would eventually reopen it. But one of the things that I was committed to was not reopening it until we had a really good plan.
Right. I mean, we should say at one point there was a proposal to tear it down, turn it into a hotel, but the council voted against that. And there were various other ideas that came forward through the years, but none of them seemed like they offered long-term viability.
No. And we knew that if we were going to reopen it, we had to do it differently, that we didn't feel like the Performing Arts Center could survive another false start.
Right.
And so one of our criteria was that we really felt that we had to have a professional management company come in. And so for quite a while, we were looking for the right professional management company. Of course, we always thought at that point that pie-in-the-sky dream would be to have Live Nation.
Yeah.
Takeover. But
the largest concert management company in the world, I understand. That's according to Doug Williford, your city manager.
That is absolutely true. And frankly, that was pretty pie in the sky to think that they would be interested in coming in
right.
and managing a small theater like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to give all the credit to Doug. He really had this vision in mind, and he went after them, and it took a couple of years, but he finally got them to agree to come down and look at it. And once they came down and looked at it, they said, wow, we're really interested. It's a beautiful theater.
Well, you know, when it was built, at the time, they said that it had the finest acoustics of any theater in San Diego County. That was before the Fox Theater for the Symphony Hall was built, but still, it was better than anything else out there, and presumably still is.
I believe so, and certainly Live Nation felt that it was a great theater that they could really put on some great shows, and they could make it financially feasible for them.
Yeah.
And so we entered into contract negotiations, which took about a year. And it's fairly complicated because not only is it their management fee, but they had some requirements about new sound, soundboards and lighting and physical changes to the theater itself, all of which are going to cost money. And we had to raise that money. So the whole process took longer than we expected. But last week we finally signed a final contract, and we're going to start construction soon. And Live Nation will be taking over the theater, and they promised to bring us 70 shows a year, if not more.
And when is the estimated date that it will actually reopen to the public?
It's going to take about a year.
Great. So around early 2019?
Yeah, I would really like to see it happen in 2018, but that's probably more realistic to believe early 2019, first quarter.
Yeah, fantastic. So we're liable to see a return to some of the headliner stars, and what else?
Live Nation's focus will be bringing in a certain kind of act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it won't be the same kind of act that's selling out stadiums, but it might be, like, there's a group called Pink Martini, which has kind of a small cult following, or maybe people that like Boz Scaggs. He'd come to town and fill 1,000 seats.
Yeah, and they've done very well. We should note that some of the other theaters that they took over the management of, there were places where it was costing cities, I understand, you know, maybe millions of dollars in subsidies, and that actually dropped substantially. So from a fiscal standpoint, while it's impossible to run a theater with no subsidy, I understand that it can really bring it way down and actually make it much more affordable for a city to offer arts and culture to the community.
It's going to be expensive. There's no way around that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having a theater in your town is kind of like sending your kids to private school.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a cheaper way to do it. You send your kids to public school, and some people think that it's a extravagance and a waste to do something like that. But it's a quality of life issue, And we have this beautiful theater here. I see no reason to waste that. I mean, that's that to rebuild a theater like that, I don't know, would cost well over $15-20 million.
Oh yeah.
So
it's such a wonderful resource. Now, you're passionate about the arts yourself. I understand that you play several musical instruments. You were tickling the ivories here on my piano when you came in, but what else do you play, Bill?
I play piano and guitar and saxophone.
Wow.
And music really, in a lot of ways, really saved my life. I was...
Really?
I grew up in the inner city, and it was just my mom and me, and didn't have a lot of direction and was kind of lost and wandering, and then we moved to Rancho Bernardo area, and the first person I met told me that I should join the band in junior high. I was in eighth grade, last year of junior high. Mm-hmm. So I went, and the band director asked me if I played, and I lied, and I said, yes, I played an instrument. And he said, what do you play? And my friend said, tell him saxophone. I said, okay, saxophone.
Oh, my.
So he gave me a saxophone. He let me sit in the band for about 6 weeks, and he finally pulled me aside and said, look, I don't care that you can't play, but you're going to have to learn. And so he gave me a fingering chart.
Good teacher.
And I started really taking it seriously and learning to play. And I was really good at it. It was the first thing I was really good at in my life.
Yeah, music can really be such an inspiring thing for so many children. I used to work at Thorough Music, you know, working my way through college jobs, and you just see the kids' faces light up when they would come in, they would try out a clarinet or a trumpet or something like that, or a piano. And of course, you know, the theater arts is another thing. I know Councilman Kendrick probably deserves some credit here too. I remember way back when his son grew up in junior theater and is now, a screenwriter in Hollywood?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so Gary understood also the importance that the arts can make in kids' lives. Now, what's going to happen as far as community groups? I know in the past there were times where Christian Youth Theater ran the theater, where another arts group ran it. I know that at first it's very expensive, and they're saying some of the community groups may not be able to afford the rental fees. Is there a long-term plan to help them with that?
Yeah, I think we have a solution to that. I mean, it certainly has to be voted on by the entire council, but my proposal will be to set aside a fund for nonprofit groups that want to use the theater, say a dance recital.
Great.
So part of the contract is that if somebody uses the theater, we can't bring in just anybody to run it. It's got to be Live Nation employees.
Right.
So there's going to be some cost involved.
But there could be a fund where community groups can come in.
So I'm thinking about setting aside like $10,000 where, if somebody meets the criteria to come in, we can pay those fees for them.
Yeah.
They can have the use of the theater for nothing or for a very nominal fee.
Yeah.
And because that's part of a community theater, you've got to be able to have, you know, dance recitals and a kids' Christmas play
and
you know, things that have nothing to do with raising money.
Well, I'm thinking too about the Grossmont Community College Association. I think Ray Lutz testified that they actually had to close their doors with the theater shut for so many years, but that he's hoping maybe they'll be able to revive that and bring it back. And they used to actually sell out and fill up the theater. So,
well, I think there's a solution to all these issues. What I am committed to is making sure that we have set-aside days throughout the year for people in the community that use the theater.
That's wonderful to hear. Now, the theater, of course, is the biggest news this week, maybe this year in El Cajon, but it's not the only news. There's a lot more happening, as you talked about last week in your State of the City address, Bill. Tell us a little bit more about what's happening in El Cajon.
Probably my most important job, which is not the most exciting part of the job, but probably the most important, is making sure that we continue to have enough revenue coming into the city so we can pay for police and fire and parks and streets and all the things that, you know, we have a $150 million budget.
Right. I mean, one can argue whether you're on left, right, or whatever about how the money should be allocated, but if you don't have enough of it, you really can't do what anybody wants.
And frankly, most of the money that we spend, I'd say 99% of the money that we spend, is not controversial at all.
No.
Left or right, everybody wants to have a street without potholes.
Right.
And
the police to show up when you call them.
Right. And we, you know, if you have a heart attack, you want the fire department to be there and properly trained and have enough people on. So all that's important for everybody.
Right.
I'm committed to not raising taxes. So it's important to me to keep enough revenue coming into the city. So one of the things I did several years ago was sit down and look at what we're good at. And one of the things that our city has been really good at is car sales. So we've really pushed car sales in the past 5-6 years. As a result, BMW was going to leave and go out of town. We worked out a tax sharing agreement with them for a small period of time so that they would go ahead and stay in the East County. They'd build a new facility.
You got a new Mercedes dealership now?
Mercedes built a new $25 million facility.
Wow.
Jaguar and Land Rover will be building this year.
Which is amazing because, you know, let's face it, it's East County, El Cajon. It actually has a fairly high poverty rate compared to some other areas. And yet you've done quite an accomplishment, I think, to get people from other areas to come to El Cajon to buy these luxury cars. And that fills up the coffers with, you know, all that sales tax revenue, which can be used for local projects.
It does. You know, if we can get the money from people outside of the local area to come in and spend their money here, then we can have access to that tax money without raising taxes on our citizens. And I think it's a win-win for us.
Yeah, and we will say that some of the things you do, it's, I think, quite good for the community. You guys do more street festivals and street fairs, and while we're seeing some other cities that have contracted the number of things they're doing, you guys are expanding that.
Well, that's by design. You know, we have spent so much time really building the city up and fixing a lot of the problems that one of the things that frustrates me is that unless you come to El Cajon for some reason, you live here, most people that I run into that are kind of North County-centric or beach-centric,
a little bit,
they don't come to El Cajon. There's no reason for them. So we have the Oktoberfest, the Haunt Fest, the Half Marathon, the Mother Goose Parade, the America on Main Street.
Which is great and very multicultural. You have every culture out there, every kind of food.
And we do all that. You know, like, for example, Haunt Fest brought in 40,000 people.
Wow.
As did the Mother Goose Parade. Most of those people come from outside of town. They haven't been to El Cajon. They come in for the parade or for the Haunt Fest. Mm-hmm. They bring their kids and they look around the downtown area and they say, wow, it's really not the El Cajon I knew
back
in the 70s or 80s.
I will say, even when we started the magazine about 9 years ago, at the time, depths of the recession, many of the businesses were boarded up along Main Street. That was before you were mayor. You know, there was a Triple X bookstore out there. It just wasn't, you know, the savory kind of place where you might feel safe walking the streets at night. Now there's restaurants and sidewalk cafes. Some of these are immigrant-owned businesses that have come in and, you know, opened things up. The city with all the festivals is certainly helping them to be all successful, all the businesses down there. And then now you've got the Performing Arts Center ready to open, which will also be a magnet to draw people from all over. And you have the a new hotel now. We talked about deciding not to tear down the theater and build a hotel, but I understand now you're getting a brand new hotel getting ready to open in January.
Yeah, that's quite an accomplishment. The Marriott is building the first 5-star hotel in the entire East County. That's all the cities in the East County. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, we always knew that there was room in the market for that. But once we talked Marriott into coming in, right on the heels of that, the Hilton Corporation came in and said, we'd also like to build a hotel.
Really?
So they bought the old police station over by the mall.
Oh, wow.
And they're going to be building a Hilton brand hotel.
And then you use the sale of the police station revenues to help support getting the theater reopened. So that worked.
Yeah, that was a one-time ability to bring in some money. So that was a great thing that happened.
Wonderful. Now, it hasn't been 100% rosy. Probably the most controversial issue in El Cajon recently, as I should say it is regionally and even nationally, has been the homeless crisis, particularly not only high homelessness, but also the hepatitis outbreak. El Cajon, you know, they've had some maybe negative coverage for the ban on feeding the homeless in public parks short term because of the hepatitis concerns, where some are concerned about that. And I know it was to protect public health. But I think a lot of people don't realize that El Cajon actually has taken a lot of positive steps that most of the other cities in East County, maybe all of them, have really not done. Can you tell us about what you have approved to help the homeless?
Well, frankly, I believe that per capita, El Cajon has done more for the homeless than really any other city in the region.
Yeah.
We've taken this problem very seriously. I should say that it's a problem that's very close to me. Mm-hmm. I work as a psychologist, and I work in a psychiatric hospital where I work in the ER, and I see patients that come in probably somewhere around 60-70% of the patients I see are homeless.
Yeah, a lot of the homeless they're suffering from mental illness, which is a huge problem.
Mental illness is a big problem, and drug addiction is a huge problem.
Yeah.
And so I work with these people very closely, and I have a lot of compassion for them. So it's important to me that we do as much as we possibly can. So El Cajon, probably our the biggest gem in our crown in this respect, is not a specifically government program. It's a government private partnership. And that's the East County Transitional Living Center. They're serving 500,000 meals a year now.
Wow.
Because they're so efficient, they serve it at 17 cents per meal.
Amazing.
They've brought over 600 families off the streets, and they keep people for up to 2 years.
They're really doing a very good job in many ways, especially helping a lot of the women and the children get off the streets and getting some of them into job training or drug rehab or whatever they need, alcohol rehab programs.
I think it's a wonderful model. It's controversial because it started off at least as a religious-based program.
I was just going to ask about that.
You know, it's undeniable, mm-hmm. the work they've done, and I think
what would it take to have a similar program, but that was non-secular? So if somebody was, you know, Jewish or Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist or atheist, yeah. they would have a place they would feel comfortable going
to. Well, first off, the East County Transitional Living Center does have a non-religious component to it, so they can serve that population.
Right, the short-term housing.
But more needs to be done, and right now I've been studying this something concept called supportive housing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the same concept. You build transitional living houses, but it's a little different. First off, you don't expect that these people will ever be discharging or leaving from your facility.
So it's kind of a housing first thing, get them into housing, but then get them supportive services they might need.
Here's the difference. Housing first kind of has a let's just build it and let anybody live there and have no restrictions upon people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the proper way to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the compassionate way to do it. Because by doing that, you're just saying to people, we're completely fine with you staying in your drug and alcohol addiction. Supportive housing requires people to see a psychiatrist about their psychiatric problems, mm-hmm. to take their meds.
Go straight if they have an alcohol problem. To get, drug problem.
At least to work towards getting off drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
To work with a therapist, to work with a program. To make that a goal, to be off drugs and alcohol.
Seems sensible.
It also asks people to be participatory in their own treatment, mm-hmm. and their own life. So if you have SSI.
Social Security.
Yeah. You know, and you're getting, say, $800 a month from that.
But it's just not enough. Yeah.
Instead of just getting free housing and using that money for drugs, or what, we're saying you need to participate in this. You need to have some skin in the game. So we're going to ask you to give 30% of your income.
Yeah, so it would be a supplemental thing.
Yeah, but if your income is $100 a month, then your rent would be $30 a month. So it's not about really getting more money for the program. It's about getting people to have an investment in their own life.
And there may be some people who are simply down on their luck. They've lost a job, so maybe training them in a new career field or helping them get an education.
Well, that might be the case. That's probably not the kind of person that would go into supportive housing. I think the supportive housing kind of comes from the concept that most of these people on the street are very injured.
They're chronically homeless for a reason,
and that probably is schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, severe alcohol and substance abuse that may have resulted in now damage to their brain, and they're never going to be able to go out and rent a house and have a full-time job and do these things. And I think accepting that makes sense. So here's what's really interesting.
But we don't give up on them as people. No.
You never give up on people.
Are compassionate. Mm-hmm.
So here's what's interesting. This is really a win-win situation because it gets mm-hmm. people off the street, but it also saves money. So in Houston, they did a study and they saw that it costs almost $15,000 more per person per year to have somebody living on the street versus living in supportive housing.
Well, that certainly can be true. I know, for example, if somebody's on the street, very often they wind up with medical emergencies. You probably see that at the ER. They're in and out for treatment of things that happen to them on the street. Maybe they're getting pneumonia or whatever it is, getting hit by cars. It wouldn't happen if they were in some kind of housing.
Well, certainly that's part of it. But also, the ER is used as kind of a social clearinghouse. So people come into the ER and they say, I'm suicidal. Now, there's no test or blood work or x-ray we can do to see if somebody's really suicidal. So we have to admit them.
Mm-hmm.
And these folks that are homeless, many of them are on a cycle where They get their SSI money. They use it. They come into the psychiatric hospital. They stay for 2 or 3 days. They mm-hmm. get discharged. They go out on the street for a few days. Then they go to the next psychiatric hospital and make the rounds. And they'll hit, there's about 12 in town.
Yeah.
So they hit all 12. And then the first of the month again, they get their check and it's back again. And it's a very expensive, the way I will say it, it's a $100,000 solution for a $100 problem.
Yeah, there you go. Sometimes it just makes sense to invest in them as a person instead of waiting until it's a crisis and you're spending a lot more. On another note, a few years ago, in response to having so many refugees from the Middle East and other places, you started a wonderful community garden program where the refugees could come in, grow vegetables, sell them at a farmer's market. And recently, I was surprised to hear the farmer's market had just closed. Can you tell us what happened? And do you think that, you know, with the Performing Arts Center and the hotel and everything coming into downtown, is there a hope that that might be revived?
Well, I know that the farmer's market did close. I don't know very much about what the specifics were about that.
Mm-hmm.
I was just told that economically it wasn't working, that the feeling was there weren't enough people living in the downtown area to really support a farmer's market. And the places where farmer's markets have been successful are where you have a lot of urban mm-hmm. living.
Are there plans to bring more housing to downtown?
Yeah, I actually live right downtown. I live in a townhouse, and the development company that built my townhouse just built another 100 of those. So I think that's going to bring more people in. We just went to a groundbreaking yesterday for a new 70 apartment units, which are not the low-end apartments, but very high, mm-hmm. nice, beautiful.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what do you see as the right mix there? Is there a way to do... It's great to have the higher end for those that can afford it.
Well, this is actually subsidized.
Okay.
So they're nice places, but they're also subsidized low-income housing.
Oh, okay.
And specifically, they're geared towards, this one is at least, geared mm-hmm. towards veterans.
Well, very good.
Towards getting veterans placed in housing.
Yeah, that's so important. We didn't even mention that, but a significant portion of those homeless folks out there are veterans who served our country. And it seems like, no veteran should wind up on the streets, whatever their other problems
may
be.
No, absolutely. In answer to your question, I think there is a good thing to talk about in this respect.
Mm-hmm.
El Cajon, what has an abundance is low-income housing. Because in the 50s and 60s, they allowed anybody to build any kind of apartment complex in El Cajon. We have a lot of really fairly low-end multi-unit housing.
Yeah, in the old days, there were a lot of places that were kind of dumpy. Now we're seeing housing built that looks very nice, and you wouldn't know necessarily that it's got a component for low income.
And that's by design. Our thought is that we are doing more than our share of carrying the water for low income housing in San Diego County region. It's interesting to me. People often say, well, there's so much poverty in El Cajon. What are you going to do about that? I say, well, there's really not much you can do about that. When you have low-income housing, you're going to have poverty. And frankly, we don't want to push low-income housing out because people need a place to live.
Yeah, it's such a thorny problem. I know nowadays to get even a one-bedroom apartment to rent is, what, $1,100, $1,200?
Yeah, I would have said $1,300.
$1,300, maybe more. I can remember right out of high school, my first apartment that I shared with two friends, my share of it for a three-bedroom apartment was $100 a month. I was able, to have a half-time job at minimum wage, put myself through community college. My folks bought books, but I paid all the tuition and still afford an apartment. And, the kids today, they can't do it. The minimum wage has not quite doubled, but housing costs have gone up many fold. So it's a real difficult issue.
No, and, I blame regulation on a lot of that. There's so many environmental regulations that before you even start building a house, it's almost $125,000. That's before you buy any land, just to satisfy all the regulations.
Yeah. So, Bill, I'm going to let you have the last word here, but are there any other things you're looking at that you would like to achieve or bring to El Cajon in the next year or two here?
Well, I probably my passion right now, we talked about the supportive housing.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that is probably the compromise solution. There's no easy way to do this because I think I can raise the money to build that kind of place and mm-hmm. to even support it on an ongoing basis. But the problem is that creates a vacuum. You open up 100 units. It doesn't just mean that the 100 people that live in El Cajon will go to those units. It could be that part of the several thousand people that are homeless in San Diego, just take a quick trolley right over here and say, oh, all of our problems are solved.
Can
and
you, now, can you have a requirement that they have to have been an El Cajon resident for some period of time?
Or? Those are all questions that I'm looking at. Yeah. I don't think that's the answer, though. I think the answer, and this is kind of makes it really difficult. I think the answer is a collaborative effort between our region and all the other regions of San Diego.
So maybe they help to pay for some of this and then their residents could go there too?
I think we simultaneously build 7 or 10 of these facilities all throughout the county and get everybody to buy in, especially the county, because the county is sitting on a huge pile of money.
They are. I've often wondered why is it that the county of San Diego, as large as they are, and they've got, you know, a couple $1 billion in reserves or more, why is it we don't have a homeless shelter in, say, you know, Spring Valley or Lakeside? They have homeless people too. Why is it all fall, you know, to El Cajon to handle the problem?
Well, frankly, it's going to be up to the citizens to require that of the county officials.
Well, it's a very ambitious idea of bringing supportive housing to not only El Cajon, but many of the other communities in the unincorporated areas or even some of the other incorporated cities. So that's something exciting, I think, to watch for.
It's early in the exploratory phase right now. I'm planning on going to Houston next month to see what they've done there. They've been very successful with that. Mm-hmm. Salt Lake City has also been very successful in that.
Yes. Didn't the city of San Diego bring in a guy from Salt Lake City to head up their homeless help efforts?
Yes. And he's got some great credentials, and we'll see what happens with that. He and I probably differ a little bit. He's more of a housing first kind of guy, where he says, look, just open the housing and let people do all
whatever
the drugs and alcohol they want. And I think that I'm mostly against that because I can't fathom how that is compassionate. Helping people and just allowing them to die in their addictions. You can't convince me. Having been in the medical field for 30 years, you can't convince me that there's anything positive about being addicted to drugs or alcohol. It is horrific to your health. It's horrific to your relationships and to your family.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a very, I think, taking a long-term and compassionate view of it, Bill, in many ways. I'm going to give you the last word here. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about what's happening in El Cajon?
No, I think that El Cajon is really on the move. You know, we're building almost 500 houses this year. We're, like I said, there's new car dealerships, new hotels.
You just finished the animal shelter. We forgot to mention that.
Yeah, the new animal shelter is coming. It's going to be the nicest in the region. And, of course, one of the most exciting things is that we're going to reopen the East County Performing Arts Center, which we've talked about. And I think you can be proud of what's happening in El Cajon and where we're going. There's certainly no doubt that there are problems. We're a fairly big community compared to a lot of cities in the country. It seems like a small city compared to the size of other cities in our region, but it's a big city and it's got big city problems. And, you know, we're always going to have challenges, but I feel like we're moving in the right direction. And I certainly would love to get as much input as I can from other people that live in the city. So if you have thoughts, you can contact my office or you can call and set up an appointment to have coffee with me. I think if we all work together, it's all for the better.
Very good. Well, I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. And listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Bill Wells, the mayor of El Cajon. We want to wish you a happy holiday, Bill, you and your family. And thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.